reading from various parts of Shastra, which has shaped Vedic culture, the meaning of Shastra, Vedic culture is the Shastra that follows Vedas, with respect to statements that would in much of modern society be considered sexist. It's not particularly enlivening to read all of these from the Vaishnava point of view, nor do Vaishnavas traditionally emphasize these points. I'm doing so in this seminar to make the point that the Vedic outlook on gender roles is quite different, from a completely different perspective to that of modern society, which has no understanding or inclination to understand the fact that all living beings are Atma, and that we get different bodies according to our previous activities. The male form, as we've read, is especially meant for self-realization. The female form is a stumbling block for that. But in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, we prefer to emphasize that we are all Atma, and that we are all eligible for the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, not considering one patra patra vicha nahi nahi stana stan jai jaha pai tare deya prema dan. The Pandit said that the pancha tattva, they did not consider who is a fit candidate, who is not. They simply gave love of Krishna to everyone. So that's the transcendental perspective. And Varnashram is there because we don't become liberated overnight, and we have to be cognizant of our own conditioning and that of others. So, Panchatantra, this is similar to and said to be derived from Hitopadesh. These have been very influential in Vedic culture. The Panchatantra by one Vishnu Sharma. So, continuing. They talk to one man, look at another very lovingly, and think of a third one within the heart. Who possibly is beloved by women? With smiling, rosy lips, they eloquently talk to a man while looking at another with expanded eyes like fully blossomed lotuses, and at the same time thinking of a man, another man who is rich and of bad conduct. For whom do women really feel love, which may seem to be the most important of all things? A fool who out of illusion thinks my beloved is attached to me becomes eternally controlled by her, just like a toy bird. Licentious women. So that qualification is there. This doesn't refer to all women, particularly those who have developed a prostitute-like mentality. This doesn't refer to chaste women. It says here, licentious women only remain within the limits of decency in the absence of a suitor and out of fear of relatives. There is no man they would not approach, nor do they care about their age, either beautiful or ugly. If he is a man, there is no further consideration to enjoy with him. As red lac is squeezed and then placed on the feet by women. Red lac, that means the, that's described that Radharani and other gopis, they have red color on their feet. And like many other things, we can say about India, in Indian culture, it was common until recently that women would put that on their feet. That is extracted, some kind of small beetle is squeezed, and red dye comes out of it. That's also used as a food coloring. Be careful what food colorings you use. So red lac is squeezed and then placed on the feet by women. So is a man attached to them, forcibly deprived of his wealth, and made to fall at their feet. Cleanliness in a crow, truthfulness in a gambler, tolerance in a serpent, satiated sexual appetite in a woman, bravery in a coward, discernment in a drunkard, or friendship with a king. Who has ever seen or heard of these? Friendship with a king, that's also there. There are many examples. There may, probably in, if you know the history of whatever country you're from, you'll know of stories of kings who, people have been friends of kings and then they get killed by them. In England, Thomas More is famous, the seven of the wives of Henry VIII, one managed to outlive him. Hitler, there was this Rommel, was his great general, and then Hitler had him killed, and so on. There are so many. Julius Caesar, Brutus. Well, that was round the other way. A libidinous woman, that means a lusty woman, feels great delight when the day is cloudy, when it is dark, when the streets are crowded, and she cannot be easily noticed, and when her husband goes abroad. A lusty woman longing for secret sexual affairs considers a charming couch spread on a bed, a charming couch spread on a bed, and a loving husband worth a straw. I mean, she doesn't want to be with her husband, she wants to be with someone else. The amorous sports of her husband burn the marrow of an unchaste woman. His love burns her bones, and his sweet words are unpleasant to her. There can be no happiness if both are not attached to one another. The family's degradation, people's censure, confinement, and even the risk of life, all this a woman attached to another man will accept rather than be chaste. Of course, we also have the example of Chintamani, the prostitute, who, when Bilva Mangal went to ridiculous lengths to associate with her, chastised him and said that, well, if you were as attached to Krishna as you were to my bag of flesh that you find attractive, you'd be such an advanced devotee. And that was for him a... Thank you. That was for him a wake-up call, and he changed his life. If by chance a loose woman enjoys with a man in a secret place, it does not matter how ugly he may be, she cannot even with difficulty feel attachment for her husband, though handsome. The deceitful tricks known by Shambhara, Namuchi, Bali, and Kumbhinashi are completely known by women. This means some mystic powers that they use for deception. These are names of various demons. As the occasion arises, they smile to one who smiles and cry along with one who cries, and thus they conquer one whom they do not really love. Just like in some countries, you can hire professional mourners. You know that when someone dies, and then you call the professional mourners to wail and weep as is suitable for the occasion. Nowadays you can just buy recordings of it. So they feign love. They speak an untruth as truth and truth as untruth. How possibly can they be kept by sober men? One should not be over-attached to women nor let their power increase. They play with men attached to them just as with crows whose wings are clipped. This would especially refer to the courtesans, who were very much part of Indian culture for many years. Courtesan means like a high-class prostitute, something like that. But more so, anyway, I didn't get into a big description of that, I guess. They're often well-educated, and they can dance, and so many. They were considered quite cultured. But then they just picked up and used men, and then if the man lost all his money, they wouldn't be interested whatsoever. There was a case, who was that? There was one famous saint. He had this girlfriend, lover, something like this. and after he would go to her every night, and then one night he said that, I didn't get my payment. I'll pay you tomorrow. After visiting her for so many nights in a row and paying her each night, he said that tomorrow I'll make payment for tonight. And she said, forget it. Payment in advance. And so that was a shock for him, because she thought that she actually was affectionate toward him, that it wasn't just the money. And I can't remember who it was. And then he became a sadhu, something like that. I just don't remember. There's so many anecdotes. They talk very charmingly with a sweet tongue, but strike with a cold heart. Honey flows in their speech. Deadly poison lurks in their hearts. A whirlpool of risks, the abode of immodesty, a city of audacity, a reservoir of faults, the home of hundreds of deceits, the field of mistrust, an obstacle to entering heaven, who leads to hell, a repository of all tricks. Who created this machine in the form of a woman, this poison mixed with nectar for the destruction of virtue? They have harshness in their breasts, fickleness in their eyes, falsity in their faces, crookedness in their tresses, dullness in their speech, stupidity in their hips, cowardice in their hearts, and always use deceitful tricks with their beloveds. These doe-eyed women are endowed with a multitude of faults, so why should they be loved by men? Women laugh and cry to attain their objectives. Actually, after I heard this, that was good information for me, because it's not... Well, sometimes it happens that women come to me and they want me to say something to someone to get... And then they start crying. And then I just don't react to the crying. Then they stop crying because they say it doesn't have any use. Women laugh and cry to attain their objectives. They get others' confidence, but themselves trust no one. Therefore, a noble man with good character should always avoid women as one rejects earthen pots in a cemetery. At first, as long as one is not attached, they act agreeably. But having known that he is entrapped in the snares of Cupid, they drag him just like a fish that swallowed a bait. Unsteady by nature, just like the waves of an ocean, women display their love, fugacious as an evening cloud. I guess that means it looks like a solid mass, but it just goes. Just like I was in Ireland, and the weather would completely change. One day in particular, the weather would just completely change every 10 minutes. There'd be clear sunshine, not a cloud in the sky. And then 10 minutes, the sky would be absolutely covered with clouds and raining. And then again, the clouds would scatter. And again, sun, like that. So like that. Their love may seem to be overwhelming, but it can scatter at a moment. It's not solid. It looks, a cloud looks very big and solid, but it's not. But as soon as they have accomplished their purposes, they give up an impoverished lover, just as one gives up squeezed lack. Externally pleasing to the mind, inside filled with poison, just like the gunja fruit, by whom were women created? It's repetitive. They bewitch, exhilarate, mock, abuse, delight, torment. Having entered the innocent heart of men, what can these ladies with charming eyes not do? Women and rivers exert the same influence over the family and the banks. By its waters, a river ruins its banks. By her faults, a woman ruins her family. Don't quite get that analogy. When a daughter is born, she afflicts the heart of the mother. As she grows up, she brings pain to loving hearts. When given in marriage, she is likely to commit a sinful deed. Daughters mean unavoidable disasters. Incited by a woman's words, A man considers a sinful act as virtuous, something difficult as easy, and uneatables as eatables. The depths of the rivers, the wisdom of sages, the origins of the dynasties, the virtue of great souls, and the misbehavior of women, all these are difficult to fathom. If fire ever became cold, the moon hot, or a wicked man became good, then women can possibly become chaste. Not gold, nor jewels, nor royal comforts are so desired by women as the man they choose, at least for the time being. A wife is always ill-behaved a wife who is always ill-behaved and fond of quarrel should be known by the wise as death in the form of a wife. Therefore, because a woman's nature is such, a man desirous of his own happiness shall by all efforts avoid even their name. What is in their hearts is not in their tongue. What is in their tongue is not expressed externally. What they express is not actually executed. Strange is the behavior of women. Who does not perish after approaching a woman with beautiful hips, just as moths out of ignorance jump into fire? Not even upon being beaten with a stick or mutilated by weapons, nor by gifts and flattering words, can women be possibly brought under control. Although previously we heard about how they should be controlled, nastriyam svatantram arhati. So this refers to this section seems to particularly refer to that class of courtesan type of woman would appear. No need to speak. I'll go back to that point later. No need to speak further about women's wickedness. For one thing is enough, they can kill even their own son in the womb, as nowadays is considered normal and quite proper. Only a fool who does not know the actual nature of women can see affection in a girl that is devoid of it, softness in her who is hard-hearted, and sentiment in her who has none. A wise man should give to his wife nice food and clothes, ornaments, etc., and approach her in the proper season, but never ask her for advice. That house where a woman, a rogue, or a boy is the ruler will be ruined. So is the opinion of Bhargava. It's quoting from some rishi. Oh, there's a whole bunch in. Oh, there's something in Hindi I didn't translate it. Only so long as a man pays no heed to a woman's words, he has a cheerful countenance and is attached to his elders. Women are completely self-centered and are concerned only with their own gratification. No one is dear to them, not even their own son, except if he contributes to their happiness. Now, an excerpt from Brahma Vaivarta Purana. And it's similar, it's repetitive. The Shastras say that only a degraded man desires a woman. At first a woman is sweet to a man, but later proves fatal. Though her mouth rains honey, her heart is like a jar of poison. She uses sweet words, but her heart is sharp like a razor. So it's a continued theme. To achieve her own selfish ends, she is submissive to her husband. Otherwise, she is unsubmissive. While her face looks cheerful, her heart is dirty. Even the Vedas and the Puranas cannot fathom her character. A wise man never trusts a base woman. She has no friend or enemy, for all she wants are new lovers. When a woman sees a well-dressed man, she inwardly desires him, but outwardly she appears chaste and shy. She is naturally passionate, attracts men's minds, and eagerly engages in sex. Though outwardly she hides her lust and appears shy, when she meets her lover in secret, she is ready to swallow him up. Only out of fear, she does not indulge in sex with many men, but when she does not get enough sex, she feels dejected. When she does not have sex with him, she feels offended, her body burns with anger, and she begins to quarrel. When her passions are fully satisfied, she becomes cheerful, when unsatisfied, morose. A woman likes a good lover, expert in sex, more than sweet foods or refreshing drinks. She likes him even more than her own son. He is dearer to her than her life. But if the lover becomes impotent or aged, she regards him as an enemy. Quarrels and anger ensue. Then she devours him as a snake eats a rat. She is rashness personified and a mine of vices. A woman is hypocritical, obstinate, and unfaithful. Even Lord Brahma and other gods are deluded by her. She is a hindrance on the path of austerity, an obstacle to liberation, an impediment to developing faith in Lord Hari, a refuge of all delusion, and a living chain that binds men to the world. She is like a magician and is as false as dreams. She appears to be very beautiful, but she is a bucket of stool, urine, gas, and blood. That obviously refers to the body. As stated by Rukmini to Krishna, similar thing. When God created her, he arranged that she should become the spirit of delusion to the deluded and poison to those who desire liberation. Thus, on no account should a woman be desired, and by all means she should be avoided. Then more from Brahma Vaivarta Purana. A man who trusts an unchaste woman is mocked by fate. His fame, wealth, and family are all lost. When she desires a new lover, the old one is finished. She is interested only in fulfilling her desires. For her, nothing is moral or immoral. The ferocious heart of an unchaste woman hankers only for sex. It is not interested in the demigods, pious deeds, children, grandchildren, relatives, friends, or her husband. With nectar glances, an unchaste woman gazes on a rake expert in sex. Rake means a lusty man who goes from one partner to another. It is not interested in the... She thinks him more dear than life. But with poisoned glances, she disdains a suitor who, although bringing jewels, knows nothing of the art of sex. Unchaste women have no proper place anywhere. Unchaste women are worse than murderers. O king of brahmanas, this is Lord Narayana speaking to Narad Muni. At a certain time, the results of past karma come to an end. This is not so for unchaste women. They suffer for as long as the sun and moon shine in the sky. A chaste woman is more kind to an insect than an unchaste woman is to her long-time lover. Finding a new lover expert in sex, she sees her old lover to be like poison. She rejects him without a second thought. On this earth, no sinner is worse than an unchaste woman. Food cooked by an unchaste woman and water offered by her are mixed with all her sins. They should not be offered to the demigods and pitas. That's one major reason why devotees should take only food which is cooked by devotees. It should be actually by initiated, but initiated means they've taken the test and the vow and offered to Krishna, because especially if you buy food cooked by karmis, and it's mixed with all their sins, and they are quite sinful. Food cooked by an unchaste woman is stool. Water offered by her is urine. One who offers these things to the demigods and pitas, forefathers, and then eats the remnants goes to hell. For 100 years he burns in a terrible blind hell. Great worms bite him day and night. One who eats food cooked by an unchaste woman becomes the lowest of men. 7 births of his pious deeds perish. His lifespan, wealth, handsomeness, and fame are all destroyed in both this life and the next. For this reason, a man should carefully protect both his wife and his arrangement for cooking meals. By going on pilgrimage, one is purified of the sin of seeing an unchaste woman. By bathing in a holy stream, one is purified of the great sin of touching an unchaste woman. An unchaste woman's charity, vows, mantras, demigods, worship, and bathing in holy streams are all useless. She lives on this earth in vain. As far as I can understand them, I have described to you the inscrutable ways of an unchaste woman. O Narada, now hear the conversation of Bali's son and Tilotama. Bali, the son of Bali, one of the sons of Bali, said to Tilotama, who's an apsara or a heavenly prostitute, he said to her, O wise one, that was a bad start. O all-knowing one, you know everything of the art of sex. I yearn to hear from you. Please tell me what is in your heart. O girl with a beautiful face, what kind of man does a girl like? See, so he wants to know because he wants to be that kind of man or cut that profile. What is his nature? O beautiful one, even though the answer to this question may be confidential and not repeated to anyone, I still yearn to hear it. Well, when we go to the spiritual master, we may say, please reveal this confidential knowledge, even though I may not be fit to hear it. So, depending on the priorities, someone may say that Bali's son said to Tilotama, the prostitute, this is confidential knowledge, but anyway, please tell me. Of all the Gandharvas, demigods, kings and saints, whom do you like best? Whom do you think more dear to you than life itself? Hearing the demon's word, Tilotama laughed and covered her face. With crooked eyes she gazed at him, thinking, what an idiot this person is. Then she truthfully told him the secrets hidden in her heart, secrets unknown even to the great philosophers. Tilotama said, O king of the demons, O lover, I will tell you what is in the heart of women that like to run after men. That means Pungschali. A philosopher that knows the Vedas, Vedanta and all other scriptures still cannot understand where the directions, the sky or the nature of women has its end. Even if he brings her gifts of jewels, a woman thinks an old man more bitter than poison. Even if he robs all she has, she thinks a young man more dear than life. When she sees a handsome young man, an unchaste woman becomes mad with desire, especially if he is well-dressed, her heart becomes devastated. With unblinking eyes, she drinks his face. Her mind becomes restless and unsteady. All her limbs tremble. Her body becomes stunned. She burns in a fire of lust. Finding him in a secluded place, she openly tells her desire. Again and again, she smiles and gazes at him. If he is sense-controlled and she cannot seduce him in that way, then she shows her body to him and openly tells him the secrets of her heart. If she still cannot attain her hero, she is miserable for her entire life. Only if she finds another lover equal or better can she forget him. What kind of man does an unchaste woman like? What kind does she not like? She likes a man expert in sex. She thinks him more dear than life. For the sake of her new lover, she easily leaves behind her husband, son, brother, father, daughter, and former lover. Chastity, charity, piety, truthfulness, praise, and other things do not please her. Only sex pleases her. While eating or resting, awake or asleep, day or night, unchaste women think only of a man's embrace. She is wrapped in meditation on men expert in sex. A ferocious, unchaste woman is always looking for another, a new lover. Okay, final episode in this seminar, I'm going to read out, almost final. This appears in, the following appears in the Shiva Purana and in the Mahabharata. Narad Muni again, he asks another apsara, Panchachura, to speak about women's nature. She replies, O Narada, this is the defect in women. Even women of noble families, women with husbands and women endowed with beauty do not stand within the limits of decency. There is none more sinning and more sinful than women. Women are at the root of all sins. I saw that quoted, Sarva Papa Karanam Stri. Women are the root of all sins. I saw that quoted in Victorian language English translation of the Prapanamrita, the Sanskrit rendition of the life of Ramanuja and the Vaishnav saints before him. So that was quoted in as a note in the... This you know already. They might have husbands of good knowledge, of ample wealth, of great comeliness and pleasing to them, but when they get opportunities for erring, they do not wait. O holy Lord, this is the evil practice of all of us women, that we resort to sinful men, casting off all shame and shyness. Women love only those persons who solicit their company, who approach them intimately, and who render them a little bit of service. Women usually do not observe the limitations of conventional decency. If at all they stand by their husbands, it is because no man makes advances to them or because they are afraid of their husbands. There is no man not worthy of honor to women. They do not care about the age of man, of the man. They carry on their affairs with any man, ugly or beautiful. It is not due to fear, taunts of affection for their husbands. This can't be right. It's not due to fear, taunts, or affection for their husbands, or regard for their lineage, that women remain loyal to their husbands. Even women of noble families aspire for the life of lascivious women, who in their prime of youth, adorned with lovable ornaments and beautiful garments, and wearing beautiful garments, move about frivolously. I recently went through, in the course of my cultural studies for Varnashram research, a compilation of writings by foreigners in India. Foreigners means from England, Portugal, Holland, Arabia, China for the last so many years. So one woman, I think it was an English woman, she reported that she'd spoken, probably via translator, to women in the harem of a nawab, that means Muslim ruler, very wealthy, and they had all comforts, servants, maid servants, of course, and all comforts and this and that. But because the one man had many wives, they rarely had the opportunity for sexual contact with their husband. And so they reported that all of them were very unhappy, and they said they'd rather be a beggar woman in the street and have the opportunity for sexual union rather than have all these comforts and prestige and everything, and not have that, even though everyone looks up to them. So even if the women who are honored, well, loved intimately and looked after with care become attached to hunchbacks, blind men, imbeciles, and dwarfs, maybe in cases like that. O celestial sage, that means Devarshi, Devarshi Narad, they become attached to lame and even despicable persons. O great sage, there is none in the world who cannot be approached by women with solicitations of lust. O Brahmana, if women do not get men for their dalliance, they begin to indulge in abnormal sexual activity with another woman. They do not stand by their husbands. Women become desperate when they do not get men, when they are afraid of servants, when they are frightened of being killed or imprisoned. Because they indulge in sexual intercourse as they please, they are fickle-minded of evil deeds and emotionally incomprehensible even to an intelligent man. That's something throughout all cultures, throughout all ages. Emotionally incomprehensible even to an intelligent man. Fire is not satiated with the logs of woods, with the logs of wood it consumes. The ocean is not satiated with the rivers that flow into it. The god of death is not satiated with the living beings he kills, and women are not satiated with whatever number of men they have sex with. Oh, excellent sage, there is an... Oh, no, I won't read that, it's too much. On seeing a man, yeah, I won't read that either. Too much means it's not very suitable, I mean, for saying in public. Women do not brook their husbands, who may give all that they love, who may honor and console them, and who may look after them very well. Okay, there's a bit more. I'll leave that out because it is repetitive. From Ramayana, when Lakshman was accused by Sita that she didn't go, that he would not go to supposedly help Ram, when Maricha the demon called out as he was shot by Ram's arrow in the form of a deer. He was shot by Ram, and he called out in his dying moments, "Lakshman, Lakshman, come and help me," in Rama's voice. And Lakshman didn't go because he said that, well, Ram, there's no question of Ram being in trouble. It's just some demon imitating him. And then Sita, being very concerned with Ram, said to Lakshman that you just want Ram to die so you can enjoy me. So Lakshman was the personification of chaste devotion. When it came, he, after living with Sita and Ram for so many years, when what was exactly the occasion? He was asked to describe the features of Sita. He said, "I don't know. I don't know. I never saw her. I never looked above her ankles." But Sita did not hesitate to accuse him of sinful desires. Lakshman therefore replied, "O Maithili, princess of Mithila, you are like a goddess to me. Thus I cannot speak harshly in reply. I know that it is the nature of women to create trouble and discord between friends. Indeed, women are so fickle and hard-hearted that when they become obsessed with some desire, they give up all sense of morality." Then Brihaspati says, from the other side, "That man who has a wife endowed with the following qualities is no ordinary man. Indeed, he is no less than Indra, the king of heaven, and husband of Sachi. His wife bathes daily, applies sweet scents to her body, speaks sweetly, is satisfied with a moderate meal, is not garrulous, that means talking all the time, has always auspicious things around her, is scrupulous in virtuous activities," that means she's scrupulous in observing the rituals of dharma, "exhibits her love and devotion to her husband in every action, and is pleased to surrender to himself to her after her menstrual period. Such an auspicious and chaste woman enhances auspiciousness all around her. She is truly beloved of her husband." Now, that's from the Garuda Purana. And, oh, now, from the other side, here's a quote from Shukraniti. Shukra, who is the guru of the demons, but it's Kaviyinamushana Kavihi, Krishna says, among the philosophers, I am Shukra, so he's given some credence also. He says that a wife will naturally feel disgusted with her husband, who is cruel, barbarous, severe, always away, impoverished, in ill health, attached to other women, or always in the company of his friends. Men should avoid these defects and treat their wives properly. So there is something in Shastra about the men behaving themselves also. In fact, the Shastra is mainly directed toward men, that they should behave properly. All the injunctions are there for them, that they should behave properly. Okay, so that's the... Oh, there's one important quote from Srila Prabhupada, one of his purports that I didn't include. I'll just read that briefly. Srila Prabhupada writes, "Unnecessary association with women, even with one's mother, sister, or daughter, is strictly prohibited. This is human civilization. A civilization that allows men to mix unrestrictedly with women is an animal civilization. In Kali Yuga, people are extremely liberal. But mixing with women and talking with them as equals actually constitutes an uncivilized way of life. Now, of course, all of these quotes, I can imagine it must be very difficult for the women especially who are sitting here to hear all these things, but we have to remember that we're not the body, we're in the body of a man or a woman due to our forgetfulness of Krishna. The male body is considered suitable for self-realization. The female body is considered more naturally better for bhakti. If you take self-realization to be the process of sense control and philosophical discrimination between that which is proper and that which is improper, then the male form is generally considered better, whereas the female form, or rather the psychology that goes with it, if one is not the kind of completely unchaste woman who is described, who's been described at length in these quotes which I've read, unfortunately, yeah, I'll get back to that. So that women are more inclined to bhakti, that emotionally they can take shelter of Krishna more easily rather than men who may have to think about it. And of course these are generalizations, but they are reliable enough that Shastra makes that distinction. Unfortunately, in the modern age, the role models are not of chaste women, but of unchaste women. Therefore, it is important that we understand this difference, and that both men and women, they follow the role models of ideal women in Vedic culture, and the men follow the role models of ideal men in Vedic culture. Of course, in traditional Vedic culture, the girls have role models all around them. We don't in the present time, and so it does become more difficult. So we should try to understand this. I'll just read a short extract from Srila Prabhupada's, it's actually the last lines of his several page purport to Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 16, the divine and demoniac qualities, chapter 16, text 1 to 3. At the end of a several page purport in which the qualifications of persons of the divine nature are mentioned, Srila Prabhupada writes, "All these 26 qualifications mentioned are transcendental qualities. They should be cultivated according to the different statuses of social and occupational order. The purport is that even though material conditions are miserable, if these qualities are developed by practice by all classes of men, then gradually it is possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization." And by all classes of men, in English usage until about 20 years ago, men is generally used to mean mankind, man and woman. So we can understand that even if we, whatever status we're in, if we're born in Kali Yuga, as a man or a woman, whatever status we're in, we can take to Krishna consciousness, and by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifest through Srila Prabhupada, we can become purified and rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization. It's also important to understand our conditioning, and not to, if we understand our conditioning, then we can start to deal with it. And if we understand the Vedic roles, then we can start to implement that within human society. Just one more thing I'm going to read, and then we can have some discussion if anyone wants to discuss anything. This is a letter that Srila, that his disciple Satyabhama Dasi sent to him. This was shortly before Prabhupada left this world. She had prepared a shawl from the wool of sheep from the farm at Gita Nagari, and the sheep had been looked after by the devotees. The wool had been prepared by devotees, and from that she had knitted a shawl. So this was the first ever from an ISKCON farm. Recently I was in Ireland also, and our devotees, they're keeping sheep, and one Mataji made for me some, she had made for all the devotees some wool asans, which is very helpful in the cold. They just thin asan like that, and you can sit on a cold floor and there's no effect of the cold. So that's very helpful. So I was very happy with that. So the letter from Satyabhama Dasi to Srila Prabhupada just demonstrates her devotion to Srila Prabhupada, which it's described by in TKG's diary, that Srila Prabhupada is very appreciative and he was very appreciative and he's very happy with that. So she wrote, "Dear Srila Prabhupada," this is just, I'm just offering this as one example of the many examples of the genuine heartfelt devotion of many of the lady devotees in our movement. It may not always be in the form of letters. It may be in the form of day in, day out service. But this is a very nice offering, which shows another side of the picture also. That anyone who takes a devotional service, whatever their position may be, becomes blessed by Krishna. At the same time, I repeat again, we should be aware of our conditioning and be careful not to be victimized by the material energy. So Satyabhama Dasi wrote, this must be November 1977 or late October, shortly before Srila Prabhupada left this world. She wrote, "Dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept my most humble obeisances. All glories to your divine grace. This shawl is made of the wool from our own sheep. It is spun and woven here at Gita Nagari." That's a farm that Srila Prabhupada founded in America. "It is the first piece we have made. While I was working on it, I would always think of you, how I was supposedly making you a gift, but actually you are giving me the gift of engagement in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada, I always pray to Nrisimhadev to protect you and allow you to stay with us to finish your books. But I think today the rain falling from the sky is actually the tears of the demigods crying at the prospect of your departure. I am also crying. Even Krishna cried at the passing of Grandfather Bhishma. So I have a right to cry. I cannot be so philosophical to say that you are always present in your books and teachings, although I know these things are true. I will miss you so much, Srila Prabhupada, if you go. I beg that I may always remain your menial servant and devotee, your humble servant, Satyabhama Dasi." Hare Krishna. Thank you for patiently listening. It's not the kind of thing we usually dwell on. But there are actually many, 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 actually all the topics in the world can be analyzed through the eye of Shastra and should be. And this is a very important topic because, as Srila Prabhupada writes, woman is the stumbling block on the path of self-realization. That could be rephrased as attachment to woman, because we see just like Narad Muni, he kept Kayadhu, the wife of Hiranyakashipu, in his ashram. And Srila Prabhupada notes that even though Narad was a brahmachari, that normally a brahmachari doesn't keep a woman in his ashram, but he was beyond attraction, so he was able to do so. He did so to protect her from the demigods who wanted to kill the child in the womb. And because that child in the womb was Prahlad, he wanted to instruct Prahlad. So, yeah, okay. Any comments or questions? It's an extremely, extremely contentious subject, and quite likely if I'd have brought it up in other communities, I would have been shouted down from early on. I asked permission from the town president before launching into this seminar. It is highly contentious, but that is because we're raised in a different culture and we have a different outlook. If it was read among traditional followers of Vedic culture, they wouldn't have any problem with it. So it's a different perspective altogether. Yes, anything please. Yeah.
I thought when you were speaking that originally the motivation of this steadiness could be that in the same time the devotee loves Krishna and is also afraid at the same time to lose him. So that steadiness in this material world could result coming from those two symptoms, the principal and the secondary.
No, my purpose was to establish that in the modern world where the concept of sexism was invented about 20 years ago, they think that they got it right after thousands, actually millions of years of human civilization. They say all that is wrong and now we got it right. The concept of sexism was first conceptualized. And according to that, all of Srila Prabhupada's books and his teachings and all of Shastra is sexist. So I wanted to demonstrate that there's no use to us pretending that we can get on well with this liberalized society because we come from a completely different perspective. I wonder what they're going to do. Are they going to stop teaching Shakespeare in schools? I mean, all the literature that's from everything prior to about 1975 or something. What are they going to do? Ban it all or what? Because it's all written it's with the same concepts. What do they do? They're going to have to rewrite the Bible. They're already busy wanting to do that. That's already been done. Now, God is all, in some editions, God is a she or he or she or it or something like that. God the Father became God the neuter. Something like that. In Vedic culture, God can be seen as male or female and many. And actually in Catholicism, it seems to me there's more worship of Maria than of Jesus. In fact, many Catholics were asked who they pray to when they have a problem, and Jesus was about 7 on the list. Mary was about number 3, and there were different saints and this and that. So, my purpose was to establish this point, that, I mean, there may be many long discussions about this, but on various aspects of this, but my basic point was to say that we have a completely different outlook. And it is, if you want to accuse of sexism, well, according to the definition that they invented, it is sexist. It's unavoidable. And my outlook is that we should just, we don't have to, it's not that we meet someone on the street and say, hey, take this book, it teaches you that women are less intelligent. It's not that that's the main prong of our teaching, but it is also there within the social commentary of Shastra, and Srila Prabhupada upheld that, and we can't avoid that. That's the point, main point of this. What's your point? You said something to me about this morning, that we should start from the high level. What does that mean, that we should say that in the spiritual world there is... In the spiritual world there's man-woman relationships.
For example, the soul loves Krishna, but also has fear to lose the relationship with him, because it is the natural consequence of loving him. So if in the religion are those two symptoms, maybe it is also the root of the unsteadiness of the soul. The soul is female because she is a servant.
Yeah, the soul by definition is prakriti and female in relationship with Krishna, who is Purush, male. Yeah, that's possible to have kind of preaching like that, but first of all we have to establish that we're not the body and we are spirit soul. That was usually Srila Prabhupada's outlook on that. Adi Rasa. the original relationship, sexual relationship, is in the spiritual world. But when we imitate Krishna in this material world, things get messed up badly. Yeah, anything else, please? Anything from the ladies' side?
Sorry, I missed so much. I'm just wondering, did you discuss the point how we men don't fall into this trap of thinking that we are somehow superior to the Matajis?
How that men don't fall into the trap of thinking I'm superior to the women. No, I didn't specifically discuss that. Because that's not the point of this. Yeah. I just wanted to, like I say, there could be so many points discussed. Yeah. There's many, many other points could be. As I've several times mentioned, I did give a seminar called Women Masters or Mothers, which gives some explanation of why in Vedic culture. Was it there? Is advertised on Dandavats? Yeah. I don't know. Not sure. So this specific point, that's the main point in doing all of this. But it is a bit of an eye-opener, what's stated there. Yeah, there's a certain kind of conditioning comes with certain kind of body. That was the main point in the Women Masters or Mothers seminar, that with the woman's body comes the not only the facility but the to give birth to children, but the strong desire to do so also. And so women should be, they should, the traditional societies, including Vedic society, give that important role to women of being mothers, and it's not something unimportant or that is secondary to having their career or whatever. That is their career. They have that important service of giving birth to and looking after children, and to deny that messes everything up. Both for the women and the men, and this more than anything, if they have children, the children get messed up by not having a mother. They need a father also. I mean, these are obvious things, but in modern society, because they're insane, they don't know these things, and they think that women don't need to have anyway. If they have children, it's, they can do it. First of all, they should have a career. Then maybe then later they can have children. And so many problems, so many crazy ideas. I was just told in Ireland that one elderly Mataji living there, devotee, one of her daughters is married with three children, but her wife is, she doesn't have a husband, she has a wife. She's married with a wife. And she has three children by injections. And the two women look after her. That's just insane. Nowadays, if you say that, you could be arrested. But actually, it is insane. It's a crazy world. So, anything else?
What about acceptance of
What about exceptions? Hmm? Exceptions. Mataji who changed her gender. Yeah, by modern science you can do all kinds of things. But this is demoniac, actually, to have a sex change operation. One should accept the fate that is given to one. Yeah, I want to change my gender. Then you do. One should change one's gender by going to the spiritual. If a woman has a desire to be a man, then she can desire to be a male in Krishna. So what's the point of changing from one sex to another within this world? Either gender, it's just a mistake to be in this world anyway. Yeah, all kinds of strange things. Sex change operation. I saw that there was one man aged 70 in Britain who, after being married and having children and grandchildren, had a sex change operation to become a woman, and had it on the National Health Service. That means at the expense of the taxpayer, because he said, well, actually all my life I had this desire. 70 years old. I mean, what a... And at any time it's crazy, but at the age of 70, it's just... The sexual desire is so much promoted in the modern world. Any actual culture begins with control of the sexual desire. Otherwise there's no human culture. There has to be some control. Control means there's marriage. Marriage means between male and female. So without that there's no human culture. But they promote it because they have no faith in life beyond death. They think this life is all in all, so enjoy it the best you can, and then the best enjoyment is sex, so have it however you want. And then they come to all kinds of strange things. Now there is also the phenomenon that many people today, it seems they're born or they develop homosexual tendencies. Some possible reasons for that. Well, it's quite common nowadays they find male fish with fish eggs in their bodies. That because female hormones are being injected into cows and maybe into chickens also, so they lay more eggs, and so there are all kinds of hormones floating all over the place. And fish are, they often, well, mackerel is one kind of fish. So they eat human feces, and so they pick up a lot of hormones. And then when we take milk and milk products from cows that have been injected with this, or people eat lots of chickens and eggs. So that may be one biological explanation, we could say, by why men become homosexual. But anyway, that's another discussion. It is also an important discussion that how to facilitate people with homosexual tendencies who want to be devotees, because Dhanavir Maharaj said that in America, most of the men who are American men who are taking to Krishna consciousness, most or many of them are of homosexual tendency. And so it's that should be considered also. It's a difficult case. How do you engage them? They can't live in an ashram. Maybe they should. It's a difficult. It needs discussing. It's not that they're all totally demoniac or something like that. It is a demoniac tendency, but so also is the unbridled heterosexual tendency. So we should consider that. The modern age life has become unnecessarily complex and difficult. But there are many issues that we have to think of and deal with if we are to spread Krishna consciousness in this increasingly insane society. Srila Prabhupada's overall solution was, of course, to spread the chanting of the holy names, along with the distribution of his books, and also to develop Varnashram communities and Gurukuls. And the purpose of the Gurukul is to train some part of the population to be first-class men, brahmanas, who by their example and precept can give proper guidance to human society. As he often said, modern society is like a body without a head. So it's insane. What can you expect in a body without a head? It must be insane. So we have a lot of work to do. A lot of work to do. The Krishna Conscious Movement in the West made a tremendous start under Srila Prabhupada. For 30 years now, more? No, let's see, 70s. Yeah, actually it's almost 40 years it's been not doing so well. Just like this, properties like this were purchased with the idea that the movement is expanding more and more, but then there was an implosion, and now just to maintain such properties is a great difficulty. And there are properties like this all over Europe, in Italy, in Ireland. There are two such properties in Germany, I believe, apart from this one, in France. So still, we have a great task to bring Krishna consciousness to the world. World that needs it more than ever. Yes, please.
Is there any use in...
By the way, all these kind of statements, these are just came to my mind. You can ask your question. This is not the kind of thing that we're going to go around preaching to the public, by the way. Although Srila Prabhupada, he did, when the point came up, he did say in public, and he didn't retract it, that women are supposed to be submissive to husbands and all this. So he made that point. But his general preaching, as I see it, Srila Prabhupada's general preaching throughout the world was on two main points. One, that we are not the body, we are eternal spirit soul. And number two, that we are controlled, we are not independent. We should accept that there is a controller, and that is God. I see this as the two main points that Srila Prabhupada made in worldwide preaching. And Hari Shauri Prabhu, in his Transcendental Diary, said that Prabhupada's two main points for preaching in India were to exhort the Hindu population not to forget their own culture and to smash impersonalism. So what was your question? Is there any use to look at India for examples of how we can develop Krishna consciousness in the West? Well, there's much to be learned from India, although it's becoming more and more off course day by day, but there is much to be learned. I have one book called Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, which gives some insights into that. Yeah? ISKCON society in India. ISKCON in India, from the management level and general level, is the leadership there is very much opposed to the feminism that's being brought in by the international GBC, and it's a major issue actually. That and other issues. There's a divide between the Indian leaders and the North American leaders, especially. Although the Oh, it's a complex thing. In Mayapur and Vrindavan, there are many Western devotees living there, and they're trying to push their agenda there. They somehow have they go and live in the dhams, and they want to promote Western culture there, and it's a source of ongoing tension, because the local devotees, they know what it means to be to live a dharmic life, and they're having this adharma forced on them, and many of them don't like it. Some of them go along with it, because in India now, feminism is being promoted from the government level, also everywhere. Everywhere they're forcing their agenda, all over the world. There's some countries like China where they don't give a damn about what the Western agenda is, but in India they just want to show themselves to be westernized all the time. There are many, many discussions, many, many topics, but there's no time for all that. Now, I have discussed these topics in many lectures, and I would like to write many books, but writing books is much bigger task than giving lectures. Gradually, some books are manifesting. This Ramayana is also very useful for understanding Vedic culture. It's also useful to spend some time in India, not just living in the dham, but actually going among the people there and interacting with them, preaching among them. Srila Prabhupada also wanted, maybe not all, but at least some of his Western disciples to do so. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your patience in listening to this. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.